please.
Thank you very much. So I'd like to thank organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak here. It's a great pleasure to be in the city. And I would like to tell you something about my work in progress together, done together with Livia Ferro, Carlo Meneghelli, Jan Plevka and Matthias Staudacher. All of them are here, so we can ask questions to them also later. And this will be work done on the in search for new integrable structures in the N equals 4 amplitude world. And as we know, this world is really rich, and we know a lot of results. Here I would like to show you only a couple of aspects, three aspects of this big world. So the first of them is most important probably for this community is the fact that the scattering amplitudes, N equals 4, has this Jungian symmetry. And any time we see Jungian symmetry, we think that there should be some integrable structure hidden there. So usually we are very happy if we are able to find it. The second thing, which also is related to scattering amplitudes, and it's developed since last few years by the group, by Arkani Hamad and collaborators, is the fact that there's a new way of presenting scattering amplitudes, new way of defining scattering amplitudes in N equals 4, and it is using this Grassmannian integrals. And this, for example, allows us to write the all loop integrand for such amplitudes. So using, for example, this BCFW recursion relation, originally written by Brito Kachazov, Eng, and Witten, but they wrote it in the Grassmannian language. And recently also they start to work on the onshore realization of their formalism, which led them to, still not published work, led them to the notion of the Plybeck diagrams, and somehow to now they are in the stage to write all integrands for the amplitudes in terms of the onshore diagrams. So there are two aspects, and the third aspect, which will be relevant to my talk, is this very curious observation done by Zwiebel, which is that the scattering amplitudes are nothing else, the three-level scattering amplitudes are nothing else than the leading dilatation operators for the integrable spin chain in N equals 4. And, for example, this, due to work of Niklas, also include this notion of harmonic action in the world of scattering amplitudes. And coming back to the first aspect, so if you see the Jungian symmetry, we are thinking about integrability, and if you think about integrability like in spectral problem, then immediately we think about Young-Baxter equation, R matrices. And the question is, can we somehow, we have three different aspects, can we put them together in one object, or can we find, for example, the R matrix written in terms of the harmonic action, which I called harmonic R matrix? Can we also can we make some relation between harmonic action and Grassmannian language? Or at the end, can we write the harmonic R matrix in the Grassmannian language? And this is the answer, this is the question which I would like to answer in this talk. And so, but if you take a look on this diagram here, so the way from the R matrices to harmonic action is very long. But we know that there is all of these objects which are appearing here, they have common feature. They are related to integrability in one way or the other. And this is exactly the notion of integrability, this exact notion which I would like to use here to make connections between all these objects on this slide. Okay, but before I go to this point, I would like to make some establish some basic notions and notation. So we heard already the talk by Song He, and he had this very nice introduction to amplitude, so I'll be really brief on this, but I would like to make some notation, establish some notation. So we are dealing here, I want to talk about the color order scattering amplitudes of planar N equals 4, and we know that we can just take N superfields, scatter them, and in general, consider the object which is labeled by two numbers. So one number is the number of particles we scatter, And the other number is just, we know that the amplitude is a singlet of our symmetry. So this gives us some additional labeling. So if you take this amplitude and expand amplitude in terms of this eta Grassmann parameters, then we are only interested in the one which are n to the 4k, and this k gives us another way to label amplitude. And then if we take our Grassmann variables and remember that all particles are massless in this theory, then we are able to write this momenta here in terms of lambda lambda tilde, and together with eta we are able to express all amplitudes using this on-shell superspace language, lambda lambda tilde and eta. Okay, so then it's also very well known and was explained by Song He, that then so we can start to, we can fix some n, we can start to consider different case, and we ask what is the form of the amplitude in that case, and we know that the simplest possible are the example of MHV amplitudes, which is k equal to 2. And the formula for k equal to 2 was given very long time ago by Park Taylor. And then if we go to the higher case, then the situation complicates, but still there's a way to produce results, at least to some loop level. Okay, but so this is so what is important to remember from this slide is that we have this notion of a n comma k. Okay, so now this amplitude has some symmetries, and we know very well that if let's ignore the collinear anomaly, so let's take the generic momenta, and in that case the amplitude has super conformal symmetry, which is just saying that if you take a super conformal algebra PSU2,2/4 and a generator and act on amplitude, just kills amplitude. And also, which is quite surprising, there is this additional symmetry, which is a dual superconformal symmetry, which is the superconformal symmetry in the dual space where dual coordinates are given by this formula that xi minus xi plus 1 is just related to momentum. And the same for supermomentum on the right-hand side. And then, again, we can take the dual copy of the PSU2,2/4, which is related to the superconformal symmetry in dual space. And again, the action of the J prime on the amplitude is zero. And then there was this very nice observation by James, Johannes, and Jan, that if we combine the superconformal symmetry with dual conformal symmetry, what we get is Jungian symmetry, the infinite dimensional symmetry. And as I said, if we see Jungian symmetry, we are very happy. There's some hint of integrability. So there is a hope that there will be a way to find a nice solution. And, for example, if we remember what happened for the spectral problem, so this allows us to sometimes even to find the all loop result.
Can I just make a more precise statement?
Okay.
The statement in that line is that symmetry A and symmetry B, commute them, find the closure, gives a Jungian. This means that if you have A and B, their closure is automatic. There are no new consequences of the fact that there is a Jungian symmetry compared to the two initial symmetries.
Well, it's not just some crappy...
No, I will say it's a dual superconformal symmetry. It's not crappy, for sure.
Yeah, but then if
the fact is that since one, let me make it even more precise. One of the two is realized in a non-local way, the original superconformal or conformal symmetry. And when you start commuting a local symmetry with a non-local, you know you will get some infinite dimensional symmetry. This is not so surprising. What makes it very strong is the non-local symmetry, which is very restrictive. when you impose it on the invariance of the local symmetry.
But I think that the statement is more here that because this is a Jungian symmetry, so there's a Jungian algebra, so we can make contact with the very well-known theory of Jungian algebras. Yes. So
okay. Just.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not a new symmetry because often people think that there is a new, much stronger symmetry which is infinite dimensional. That's not. It's a consequence of the two finite dimensional symmetries.
But this is what I said. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So this was a three level that if we go to loop level, then the symmetry is broken, but it's broken in a very nice way. I mean, we can put our hands on the weight. It's broken, and Song described it. Okay, so if we have this Jungian symmetry, then in the amplitude language, there is a way to define this Jungian algebra, and this is so-called the first Dreyfus realization. So what we have to do to define the Jungian algebra, we take level zero generators, and this is just generators of our algebra, and then we add on top of this level one generators with the certain computation relations with the level zero generators. And these two sets of generators plus the set relations, which just produce the higher level generators, produce for us this infinite dimensional algebra, which is Jungian. And the statement of Jungian invariance is nothing else that if I take any element of this Jungian of PSU 2.2/4, then I will, our amplitude will be killed by this generator. And there is a very nice realization of this generators of the zeroth and the first level for the amplitudes. One, instead of this on-shell superspace language, one go to the twistor representation of it. And then, so instead of lambda tilde eta, we have some Fourier transform of the lambda. And in this ZA language, the first zero level generators are just bilinears, and the first level are just given by this formula. And we could follow, we could go to Song et al, and I mean, This is the usual way people treat the Jungian symmetry in amplitudes. But then, if we go to the poster room, then there is this poster of Matsumoto about Jungians, and then we see that there is not one realization. One can find another realization of it, and maybe one of them is better than the other. And for example, Alessandro Torrielli advertised for us the second Dreyfus realization. Which we will not focus here, but we'll focus on the other one, which is also written in this poster. And this is so-called RTT definition, which is quite close to the second Dreyfus realization, but still different. So what is this RTT definition saying us? So this is just another approach to define this algebra. What we have to do, we have to define the monodromy matrices. So here it's defined, for example, you can think about that as a spin change. We have quantum space, L times, some representation of some algebra, and then there's a auxiliary space, and what we have to do, we have to take a tensor product of the object, which I called R here, which are just acting on the one copy of one side of the quantum space and auxiliary space. And then if I define such object, then this is just a generating function for the Jungian generators. So what I have to do, I have to take my monodromy matrix and then expand it in this parameter Z, which is called spectral parameter, and then order by order, I get zero level, first level, and up to infinity. Okay? But in order to find this, I have to focus on, I have to find this object R here, which are called R matrices, which are the spectral dependent solutions of the Young-Baxter equation. So this is the way Young-Baxter equation is related to Jungians. And this transfer matrices or even some other objects that are called transfer matrices, which are traces of this monodromy matrices, they prove the usefulness in the theory of integrable models, like quantum inverse scattering method. But we also saw in this Finley approach, they appear in many different contexts in the integrable models. Okay. But then there is a question. Okay, so we have these two approaches. And what is the relation between them? Yeah. So can we really make it more precise? Or in other words, so we have this first referentialization for the amplitudes. Can we put amplitudes in the other language such that it will fit more to the well-known theory of integrable models? So the question arises, what is the role of the Young-Baxter equation in the amplitude language, which was never discussed? And especially the interesting one is, okay, what is the spectral parameter in this world, in the world of amplitudes? And then I try to answer these questions. Okay, so the first hint, which one can find in the literature, it's not mentioned then, but if one reads Zwiebel paper from a year ago, then what Zwiebel did, he established some relation between the amplitudes, three-level amplitudes, and the leading expansion of the dilatation operator, where here, on the right-hand side, what we have an amplitude with L plus two legs, and this amplitude depends on this parameter. I mean, this lambda is just the on-shell superspace parameters. And this amplitude, three level, can be seen as a kernel of the dilatation operator going from L particles to two particles. Okay, and then, this is just saying that this is kernel. And in particular, the most interesting case here is when L is equal to 2. Because if one takes L equal to 2, it's easy to realize that this D222, we know very well, is just a Hamiltonian of the nearest neighbor and integrable spin chain. As such, this Hamiltonian can be written as a logarithmic derivative of some R matrix evaluated at Z equals 0. Okay? So the question arises, so we have spin chains, we have amplitudes. Zwiebel told us there is a relation between this Hamiltonian and the amplitude, the four-point amplitude. And we know that there is some object, which is a spectral-dependent object, from which we can derive this Hamiltonian. Can we find something on the amplitude side, which is a counterpart of this R of Z? And then, what is the way to, starting from this object, how to get this four-point amplitude? So, in order to answer this question, I will make. I have to focus for a second on spin chains, and I want to tell you what is the simplest possible way of defining a Hamiltonian for this spin chains here. In terms of it will be the definition in terms of the harmonic action. Okay, so what is harmonic action? We've heard at least one talks in this conference about harmonic action. Let me briefly discuss it. So what we have to do, if we want to define the harmonic action, first we have to define our two-side state. So we take a two sides of the spin chain. Then on these two sides, in n equals 4, there can be any particles. There can be any excitations, scalars, fermions, derivatives. But what we know that we can write them using only the oscillators. So there is a way to represent this all excitations using oscillators. So what is written here, so we take our bare vacuum and then act with the oscillators, and then these oscillators, they are labeled by two numbers, pi, is just the site number, so it acts on the first or on the second side, and then it has some colors here. So this produces for us some two-side states, so we just fill our states with oscillators. But then there's one thing which we have to remember, not all possible collections of the oscillators give physical excitation, so we have to, on top of it, demand that there is a central charge on each of sides is equal to zero, which gives us some restriction on the space which we produce in this way. And to be more precise here, so these oscillators here are just standard harmonic oscillators. And then if we want to define the harmonic action on this two-side state, What we have to do? So we have these oscillators, and Niklas told us what we should do. We should take any number of oscillators on one side, any number of oscillators on the other side, and just move them to one, the first one to the other, to the second, and the second to the first. Okay? Now, we have to be careful again, because after we can end up with the excitations which are not physical, so we want to remove these possibilities, which is just demanding that at the end, after flipping these oscillators, our central charge on each side is still zero. But if it's zero after moving, then what we do, we just add some coefficient here, Cn, N12, it depends on three numbers, so it depends on the number, on total numbers of the oscillators, on the numbers of the oscillators which jumps from the first side to the second side, and the number of oscillators which jumps from the second side to the first side. Okay? And then what we have to do, we have to add up all such contributions. So there's many, many, many of them, but we add them. And these coefficients here, what Niklas found, are given by these ratios of the gamma functions, or you can also write it as an Euler beta function. And there's a small issue, because if one take a look on this formula here, if N12 and N21 is equal to zero, this explodes, so one has to regularize, and this object Cn00, the proper way of doing this is just putting into harmonic number N over 2. And then what Niklas show is that, so this action here produces exactly the same results as the action of the well-known Hamiltonian for this one-loop spin chain, which is just psi function of j plus 1 minus psi of 1, where this j is related to the second Casimir of the representation, of the tensor product representation. And, okay, one could ask why this is nice, because if one want to really calculate this object, it's very difficult. One has to invert this relation infinitely, or go to projectors. It's not so easy, but this is just a prescription which gives a easy way to produce a matrix of the Hamiltonian. And because of that, it was really useful for the spectrum of the anomalous dimensions in N equals 4. Okay, but then this H here, so this density which is here, it's a Hamiltonian density of the integrable model, so it has to come, as I said before, from the R matrix. So that the H has to be a logarithmic derivative of the R matrix evaluated at the spectral parameter equal to zero. And we know very well this R matrix. This is just the R matrix which also appears in many contexts in N equals 4, but it comes from the SL2. Spin chains. And again, so this object here, it's the comment holds. So this object is difficult to calculate. This object is also difficult to calculate. So the first question is, can we find a way to write the simpler form of this R matrix? In general, can we just express this R matrix in terms of the harmonic action language? So can we find a harmonic R matrix? And the answer is yes, and here I simplify a bit the problem. I don't want to give you in full details the N equals 4 derivation, but I focus only on the compact representation. So the first thing, I forget about the supersymmetry. I consider only GLN algebras. Then I focus only on the compact representations. Then I can comment on non-compact later. And on one row representation, which the singleton representation of the N equals 4 spin chain is one of the examples. But in general, this means that there is one label in the representation. Let's call this label S. And then if one want to produce this two-side state, then one has to take the vacuum and fill it with S, where S is the label of representation, different oscillator, not necessarily different, the oscillators on each of sides. And then the procedure which I described with this hopping, the flipping of oscillators or jumping, call it as you want, can be written algebraically in the following way. So if I want to hop I oscillators, then okay. So the comment is we remember that there is the central charge condition after. So if we start from two states. All of the, each of them has S oscillators, and then after we want to have also S oscillators on each side. So the only thing which we can do, we can only hop either 1, 2, 3, or we cannot just move from one side to the other. So this operation here will tell us how to do this algebraically, so how to hop the exactly I oscillators from one side to the other. And it's easy to convince oneself that it does its job, because what it's doing, it's acting on some two-side state with oscillators. It kills some oscillators on the second side. It kills some oscillators on the first side, I of them on each of the sides. And then it reproduces on the second side the oscillators which were on the first side, and reproduces on the first side the oscillators which were on the second side. So it really hops the oscillators. And then this H which we had before, so this H simplify and can be written just, it's a sum from I equals 0 to S, and the total number of oscillators is 2S, and we jump I of them, we hop I of them, so this coefficient is C 2S II, hop I. Okay? So the question is, if we can we use now this basis to find R matrix? So how to do this? So one has to solve, in order to find R matrix, one has to solve Young-Baxter equation. So what we want to find, we have to find an R matrix which acts on two copies of the oscillator representations. So in our Young-Baxter equation, we have to take two copies, so I call it 1 and 2, of the oscillator representation. But then the third space, we can take anything we want. It can be, for example, fundamental representation. So this is the simplest possible Young-Baxter equation, which gives us this object, which is the black dot here, which is the R matrix we are looking for. So this is explicit form of the Young-Baxter equation, where this is just the way this the first space interacts with the fundamental, and this is just R matrix of interaction of the second space with the fundamental particle. So this is a form of the Young-Baxter equation. Form of the generators is just bilinear in the, as we saw before also, in the oscillators. And if we make the following ansatz, which is, it's very similar to this kind of ansatz, but we have functions of the spectral parameter here, one can find the answer. So this is the R matrix written in terms of the this hopping basis. So it's a harmonic wave of doing this. So what we have here, so we have some normalization which is fixed.
Yes? You assume this ansatz is the fixing of the coefficients you need?
This coefficient? I was about to comment. So this coefficient here will be fixed by additional assumption that of unitarity. So you assume unitarity and then you fix this coefficient here. You can think about crossing. This gives you probably the more freedom, but we don't talk about crossing here. So this is fixed by unitarity, and here we have again the sum of these hop terms, and then the coefficients are just beta functions. As we saw also in the previous case, but now the beta functions are z-dependent. And so the first comment is referring back to the Hamiltonian, that the right-hand side is finite for all i's, so there is no need for regularization. And if we take the logarithmic derivative of it, it produces for us this Hamiltonian in the harmonic action form, and also produces for us this first term, term h n, 0, 0 in a natural way. We don't have to think too much. We just take the logarithmic derivative and we find this formulas.
So usually you write Hamiltonian for JLM. So you take trace over the
You take trace of the auxiliary space to get the Hamiltonian.
This is density. This was Hamiltonian density here. Okay, yes. So it acts only on two sides. Then you have to, if you want to reconstruct full Hamiltonian, then you have to add homogeneity over the side index, yes?
And also take the trace of the auxiliary space?
Or No. Why? There's no auxiliary space here.
Oh, in the next transparency, you have the formula for the R matrix.
Yes.
So the auxiliary space, as far as I understood, is also there as dimensional.
Here, if you want to find the Hamiltonian, you have to take R matrix in the same representations. It's a bit different story than before. Before, for transfer matrices, you take a quantum space, some representation, and auxiliary space, a fundamental representation. Then, but this is different object. this R matrix here is a different object than the one in the transfer matrices. It's a local two-side object from which you can get the Hamiltonian density.
How do you get the Hamiltonian density?
You just take logarithmic derivative. You can just okay. So if there's transfer matrix from which you can derive the Hamiltonian, and then there's a R matrix from which you can define the Hamiltonian density. And so in the first case, so that there was some external space before, but we took the trace over it. And in the second case, we only speak about the local objects.
As long as the R matrix reduces to the permutation operator at some.
Yes, exactly.
There is no auxiliary space. It acts in the.
It's not auxiliary space.
What?
Yeah, but one can also solve this particular example of Young-Baxter equation. It's easier.
So if I have a spin chain of length 10, what do I do? Multiply 10 R matrices?
You just have to take a sum from 1 to 10, H, I plus 1.
Okay, that's
Yeah.
But can you build it as usual by multiplying R matrices?
You can take... Okay, but then it's not this. Then it's... Let me think. Okay. Yeah, usual thing. So you have to... You have to take this R matrix, then take tensor product, and then take a...
It seems that you and Matthias giving different answer to the same question. But,
but it's given... Okay.
I think we will continue during the discussion.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe you will remind us what is index S actually here, what it's...
Oh, this index S here.
Yes, S.
So,
information.
At this point, here, I focused on the compact representations which are a label of the representation. So this S is a label of the representation. I should maybe repeat it. Okay. So this result is nice on its own because it's new. It's a R matrix in a new form. For the R matrix which we already know, so for this R matrix, but the calculation, I mean, there are questions. the way we can produce easily the matrices of this R matrix, so the matrix form of this matrix is much easier using this, and this gives also an alternative proof of what Niklas did. That the harmonic action, the Hamiltonian harmonic action comes from the integrable spin chain. Okay, but, so this is interesting on its own, but the question is, if this is relevant to any other thing. So for example, we want to focus here on amplitude. So is it relevant to amplitudes? And the answer is yes. Because if we take this R matrix here, and then just evaluate the kernel of this R matrix, and then this is a structure which we will see. So there is some integration over some parameters, and there are delta functions of the oscillators. So this is a kernel. So there are, in this case, four different families of oscillators. Okay, but this, if one takes a look on this, it's very similar to the Grassmannian formula for amplitudes. So maybe this is a way to go from this harmonic action. I mean, to go from Young-Baxter to amplitudes. Let's see. So before I go to this, I have to remind you what this Grassmannian formulation is of the amplitudes, very briefly. So it's work done by many people, and many results are not published yet, but the one which are published are, okay, so the amplitude, here I called it L to distinguish from the other approach. It's just defined as a Grassmannian integral, so there are some parameters C, A, I, and then it's a... I agree, but I don't speak about... I don't speak about the momentum twisters. Okay, this is my ignorance then. I'm sorry. Okay, and then what we have here is a product of delta functions, And here I really focus, we focus on the PSU2, on 4/4 delta functions. What we have here is just there's some linear combination of Z's, and the Z's are just these twisters which I defined before. So it's mu tilde, lambda tilde, and eta. So there are some additional index A here, but I will not talk about this. It's not important here. And then what we have here in the denominator are just minors so the C forms a matrix, K times N complex matrix, and M's are just the minors of this matrix, so the determinants of K by K submatrices. So this formula is a bit redundant, so there is some kind of gauge freedom here, which is related to the fact that, this matrix C describes some Grassmannian. So, Grassmannian is just the parameterization of how we can embed the k-dimensional plane in the n-dimensional plane, and then there is always possibility of rotating this k-dimensional plane, which gives some redundancy. And if you want to get the final answer here, we have to fix this gauge freedom. And the usual way of doing this is, so this is an example of L 4,2. So this matrix is just 2x4 matrix. And we fix the gauge freedom just by saying that this 2x2 matrix here is just identity, which is leaving us with 4 parameters. But so this is the evaluation of this expression for the 4,2. But if you take a look, this is exactly very similar to this form. Okay, so there is a hope that we'll be able to find something in the amplitude language which is similar to, which is an R matrix or similar. And then, okay, I'll briefly say about this, but this slide is only to make motivation for the ansatz for this R matrix, because we can completely forget about the previous story, we can forget about the harmonic action. We can just ask if there is a solution of the Young-Baxter equation in the Grassmannian language. Okay? And then one has to make some ansatz for the answer, and our ansatz will be that as before, so we had our object, which is 4,2 here, L4,2. We take this object and just modify it by this function f. This function f can depend on the Grassmannian parameter c, and we allow it to also depend on some spectral parameter z. And we take this form for the kernel of the R matrix, and just plug in to the standard, exactly the same Young-Baxter equation we had before, written in a bit different form, but it's the same equation. So this R curly R here is just a kernel of this R app. Just take it, plug it, solve it, and if you additionally assume that all particles have physical helicities, then we find a unique solution, and the unique solution is given by this F in this form. Okay, so this is exactly what we are looking for. This is an R matrix. This is a harmonic R matrix in the Grassmannian language. Okay, but the story is not stopping here, because we know that in the amplitude language, the 4-point amplitudes are not the most fundamental object. According to BCFW and according to Arcani-Hammond et al., we can write every amplitude using the 3-point amplitude only, just using BCFW recursion relation. And it's not only everything here was 3-level, but it's not only true for 3-level, but also if you add this additional term, which they derived, then we can also go to loops. So this is a recursion relation for any loop level, any number of legs, any helicity. Okay, so the question is, can we also lift this construction? Can we lift it to the spectral dependent construction? So can we, for example, here we know that everything can be written in terms of only these two types of vertices, yes? So there is an MHV bar 3-point and MHV 3-point amplitude. So if we just take this equation, just use it recursively, at some point we end up only with this kind of term, of this kind of object. And what more, these authors and many more, they're working now on the solution to this recursion relation in terms of only, and this is an amazing thing, this can be, all amplitudes can be expressed in terms using only the on-shell diagrams. Okay? So the question is, let's take their construction and let's try to lift it. And how to do this? So there is a very simple way to produce this this reduction. So to write every amplitude in terms of the three-point amplitudes. And how to do this? So let's focus on the tree level only. One has to take this kind of lattice, where here on the right we have particles from 1 to k, and down here it's n minus k particles from k plus 1 to n. And just take this lattice and just use this dictionary here. Okay? So there are only three kinds of vertices. There are this kind of t vertices, this kind of vertices, and cross vertices, and just translate in this form. So what do you get? You get, for example, for A, so this K here is related to so this N and K are related to two labels of amplitudes. So if you want to take A 4,2, just use this procedure here. What you end up with is this picture. Where this, again, this black dot and white dot was exactly these objects which we know very well. These are these amplitudes, MHV and MHV bar amplitudes. And one can proceed. I mean, one can find this is a way of producing any amplitude for any k. Here's an example for 6,3. And as we see, I mean, this, as I said, this is a three-level amplitude. So, but we see here loops, but these are not. So I want to stress that in this on-shell formulation, if we see loop, it's not a loop really. It's still both of these pictures, they are describing the three-level content. So these are three-level amplitudes. Okay, so we have our... Okay, I think that it's possible. Yeah. So there is a question now. Okay, so can we lift? If we have this prescription, the only thing which we have to lift are three-point vertices. So we have to lift three-point amplitudes to the level of, to include also spectral parameter dependence for them. And so the question is, what kind of equations this object should satisfy? And in this case, there will be also two objects, so that there will be an MHV R matrix. I could say MHV harmonic R matrix and MHV bar harmonic R matrix. And they satisfy, and in pictures, the equations they satisfy are the following, which reminds a lot this bootstrap equations which Alessandro Torelli told us 2 days ago. So how to read these equations? So it's very similar to the one before. What we have here, this horizontal line is just a fundamental representation. This is our object R3 black dot or R ballet or R circle, and we can write them in the algebraic form, and it looks like this. Okay, and then I wrote here that this R, both of them, depends on two spectral parameters, Z1 and Z2. So here is only Z1 appearing, but then one can think about that there is a symmetry between 1 and 2. So 1 is on the left, 2 is on the right. One can write those very similar equations exchanging 1 and 2, which introduces for us a second spectral parameter. Okay, so this depends on two spectral parameters then. And this is a solution. So this is, so our MHV is just the same formula as for the MHV amplitude, but there's additional factor here, additional function, which depends on Z1 and Z2, these two spectral parameters. And the very similar formula for the MHV bar. It's really the same function here, but the delta functions are different. Okay, so this should be our building blocks. We should glue it together now. But there is one more thing here which is intriguing. So if we discuss this harmonic R matrices with four legs, and there was only one spectral parameter. Here we have some simpler object, and we have two spectral parameters. So why is that? And the reason is that If you go back for a second to the 3-point amplitudes, so if we demand that all legs of this amplitude are on shell, they have vanishing central charges and real momenta, and total momentum is equal to zero, then the 3-point amplitude vanish. The only way to make them non-trivial is to complex, not the only, but the way to make them non-trivial is to complexify momenta. So in the case of the R matrices, we, on top of that, we have to also relax the central charge condition in order to get non-trivial result. And then, if we, led by this, okay, so, and then, if we just take the central charge, and, okay, so there's J1 central charge on the first leg, on the second leg, and on the third leg, and this is an example only for the, MHV bar R matrix, we see that the interpretation of the spectral parameter arises from these three equations. And it's just saying that the Z1 is eigenvalue of the central charge on the first first leg, Z2 for the second leg, and then the third one is saying that there is some kind of conservation of the central charge in the vertex. Yes? So that the central charge, so we have central charge on the first leg equal to Z1, on the second leg equal to Z2, on the third leg it's Z1 plus Z2. So there's some conservation of the central charge. Okay? So which gives us an interpretation of the spectral parameters which appear here. So the spectral parameters are nothing else than the unphysical helicities of particles or unphysical central charges. Okay? And then, so coming back to this question, why there's only one spectral parameter for the R matrix, 4-point R matrix, the fact is that we assumed additionally when we were solving the Young-Baxter equation that these outer particles, they have physical helicities. But then if you go back to the pictures which I showed you before, this four-point object was written in the loop. So this loop just, there is nothing against having a helicity or central charge going inside of this loop. So the spectral charge Z here, which appears in R4,2, it's related spectral parameter which appears here is related to the central charge going in this loop on shell, in the on shell diagram. And we can go to higher, and we see that there's more and more spectral parameter, which is a very interesting thing. So all the outer particles are physical, with vanishing central charges, but then still we can have some kind of loops in which there is something propagating, which is the something is a central charge. Okay, and then, so it's very close to the end now. Then everything was for the tree level. But we can go with the construction of Niemark-Cunningham et al. To loop levels also. And then what they are saying is, if we take an amplitude of the given loop level, the given number of legs and the K, the helicity K, then we can produce out of it another amplitude with two less legs, one less helicity, and loop more. So the simplest example is that from three levels, 6,3, we can produce one loop, 4,2. And if one follow this procedure, what one can find is that according to their rules, one can find the standard thing which we know, which is just the one loop, A 4,2 is just three level, 4,2 times a box integral. And we know that the box integral is a divergent object, so we have to go to some regularization scheme, dimensional or mass, and then we can find this answer which is divergent when in this case, the dimensional regularization is divergent when epsilon comes to zero. Okay, and this is my last slide. But the fact that we modified our amplitudes and we added something, the spectral dependence, gives us this exciting possibility that maybe this will produce for us a new way, a completely new way, to regulate this loop integral, this loop integral, loop amplitudes. So instead of going to the dimensional regularization, we go to the spectral regularization. And this is based on this, what I said so far, it's very nice thing because it would be nice thing because then it's a symmetry preserving regularization. Okay, because from the beginning we are working this framework of Young-Bach's recreation. And the other thing is that it will be exactly in the fourth dimension. Yeah? So we would make just standard integrations with some additional factors coming from this z-dependent part. Okay? And this is a part which is currently under like very active investigation. And this is a point which to go to the summary. So what we did in this work is we constructed a new class of objects which are deformations on equals four amplitudes. This we add this additional parameters, and then we introduce the spectral parameters into the world of the scattering amplitudes. And why what is it good for? So there are many things one can think about, but let me mention only three. So for example, when you read Niemark and Niemann, then they don't specify contours. I mean, the way they specify contours is not so clear, at least for me. But then here we have additional parameter which we can play a bit, and maybe the analytic properties of this in this parameter allow us to fix contours of integration of the Grassmannian integration. And then the thing which I mentioned before is that there is a possibility to provide a new symmetry preserving regulator for the loop amplitudes. And it also, I mean, coming back to our motivation. So we started from some relation between spin chains and amplitudes. Maybe there is a way to establish an exact link between these amplitudes and the spectral problem, which is believed to be solved now. And as a final comment, I would like to mention that the spectral parameter was really a key to solve ADS-CFT all loop problem, and especially it appears in ABA, TBA, Y system, and I have this hope that maybe this history will repeat in amplitudes also. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions, please.
If I'm not mistaken, the Grassmannian of Arcani Hammett et al. Does not give you the amplitude. It gives you the leading singularities of amplitudes or some sums of leading singularities. What does your object give?
I think that I have to... it's not true that it gives only leading singularity. If you take a look on the not published papers... I mean talks Niemark and Hammett gives around the world, then you see that they're claiming now that they can produce an amplitude. And this is what I showed here, this example of the one loop box. It's just a box, it's a full amplitude. It's not leading singularity. So they have a way to produce really integrants of, and it's not only leading singularities. So we believe that it will be the same in our case. And so what we produce integrants for the, with Z dependence of the full amplitude.
Okay, the integrant story I think is different from the Grassmannian. I'm not an expert. I don't know about these things. I think they are related, but they're not exactly the same, right?
I don't know what you mean here, but I think that they're the same. What do you mean?
Should be a trivial question. Why this extra parameter helps with divergences? Can you remind?
Okay, so it just changes the integrand, yes? So
there is but why it changes integrand and the way that it becomes finite? That's the question.
No. Then the spectral parameter serves as a regulator. Okay, it will be some function of Z, of spectral parameter. It's the same, like, if you go to the dimensional regularization and you write everything in 4 plus 2 epsilon dimensions, then the divergence is in epsilon. So here, we believe that the divergence is just in the spectral parameter. So the amplitude is somehow related to Z equals 0, but as a function of Z, it can be a divergent object in Z equal to 0 for loops.
So I have a comment to what you just said and then a question. The comment is that, and the previous question as well, as far as I know from the published papers, Serkani, Hamed et al., they only do integrands, and they carefully avoid all regularization issues, because what is in the unpublished papers, I don't know, but regularization is taboo. But we know it's very important. So if you can do it properly with a different regulator, it will be a big achievement. Second, so the question is related to this. The dual superconformal symmetry has a chiral and anti-chiral sector. And usually there is a problem with the anti-chiral Poincaré supersymmetry. So the loop corrections normally break it. We know various reasons. It's not due to the infrared divergences, but due to the fact that the amplitudes are formulated in a chiral way. So there is the so-called chiral, anti-chiral anomaly of the dual superconformal symmetry. Can you improve on this? This is, I think, an important question. Do you understand the nature of the anomaly and how to control it?
So the answer is that no, we didn't think about this. Okay, so I don't know the answer to this question.
Okay, one question. You have this very nice integrable structure. Mm-hmm. And my question is, what do you think about the amplitude? What is this object that you are computing? How do you think about it in this two-dimensional integrable language? It's not a spectrum of some operator. What is it? We have this R matrix.
Okay.
What are you computing?
So for example, the one thing is this relation between the four-point amplitude and the Hamiltonian. Yes, so you can think about this as some kind of kernel of the way the Hamiltonian acts, but the space is not the spin chain space. It's on very. I mean, you don't even act on anything. You are left with delta functions only. Yes. So just talk about some kind of kernels. I don't know if this answers your question.
Yeah. If you go to high loops, is there a correspondence between... Well, first of all, Hamiltonian is not known, but let us take now amplitude and go to high loop and insert your Z-parameter regulator and compute R. So...
Very good question, yeah.
So what will... Did you try or do you have some idea what will happen?
Okay, we didn't try yet. It's a very good question, and it should give some feedback back to spin chains. This is one of the last points here.
How does the number of spectral parameters actually increase with the number of legs?
It increases with the number of legs. That is true.
But quite fast.
You are asking how fast. Okay, I can answer this question. It's for tree level, it's exactly k minus 1 times n minus k minus 1.